For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Badlands podcast, the only podcast out there that is 100% chiseled and is found exclusively here on Chairshot Radio Network. I am Mags, and unfortunately, real life has kind of dealt Badlands a blow this week. Obviously, we spoke last week about Ray Rance and his real life issues, so he's obviously not here today. But also, Mr. Toller, in a stock cube related incident, has had to welch on this recording. So, get well soon, Mr. Toller. Feeling a little bit under the weather, but. Essentially, that means you've got just me and my kind of thoughts on Tolly's topic from last week, which was what if the Ultimate Warrior was a success as WWF champion? Obviously, when Tolly and Ray are back, we'll kind of get their viewpoints on it, but it gave me a chance to kind of get my viewpoints down on this without the diminutive little Welshman sticking his oar in. For those wrestling fans who don't know the story behind Warrior and only heard the kind of rumours and innuendo, I'll fill in with a little bit of a backstory. So Jim Helwig, he started as a amateur bodybuilder, pretty successful at it, and after about a year or so of going to these amateur tournaments, he was invited to join a group of bodybuilders who were looking to form a pro wrestling team. So after that invite, he dropped his aspirations of being a chiropractor and a professional bodybuilder to essentially throw himself into the crazy world of professional wrestling. And in less than 3 years, Mr. Helwig had made his way to the biggest promotion in the world, the WWF, following spots in the CWA, Universal Wrestling Federation, and World Class Championship Wrestling. In his first year in WWF, he showed a hell of a lot of potential. Vince really kind of saw something unique in him, and he ran through a series of jobbers and really kind of excited and enthralled the crowds with his high-octane, unique, energetic entrances, where he would essentially full-on sprint to the ring, violently shake the ropes. He had his own version of the hulking up, where he would be able to withstand the attacks of his opponents, and usually would have the almost kind of Goldberg style matches where 2-3 minutes he was in, beat down on his opponent, and away he went. And what kind of set him apart from a lot of the wrestlers of that era was his bright ring gear, the tassels around his arms, the colourful face paint and the body paint, the body that looked like it was absolutely carved from granite. He essentially looked every single bit the kind of late 80s, early 90s WWF superstar, kind of like a larger-than-life superhero. So he quickly settled into feuds with Rick Rude and then a mini feud with Hercules where he snapped Hercules' chain and then a little run with Bobby Heenan as the Weasel. And he was then pushed into the Intercontinental title picture, kind of like back then it was the stepping stone to the world title and kind of the workhorse championship. Ironic that somebody with as limited wrestling acumen as Warrior was pushed into that division. But he ended up breaking the record-setting title run of the Honky Tonk Man in a 27-second squash match, meaning the Honky Tonk reign as champion, I think, was 454 days. That was at the first ever SummerSlam, and he claimed that title. He ended up that same year captaining and being the sole survivor of his own Survivor Series team, which was a big deal for a relative newcomer in the company. And it was clear he was being primed for a main event position. 1989 come round, and this year was a year that cemented his status in the company. He kept hold of the IC title up till WrestleMania 5, lost it to Rick Rude, then got it back at the next pay-per-view, SummerSlam, and then he actually came out on top in a feud with Andre the Giant that ended with the two being opposing captains at Survivor Series in 1989. And yet again, Warrior was the victor and the sole survivor for his team, so 2 years in a row he's been the one who stood tall at the end of the match. And then when we get to 1990, we see that Warwick being kind of primed for a feud with then WWF champion Hulk Hogan. So the seeds were planted around the Royal Rumble when we get a little bit of a face-off. Hogan went on to win the Rumble, and then the WWF went into full promotion mode, wanting to push the match between the two biggest stars that they had at the time, Ultimate Warrior, the Intercontinental Champion, and Hulk Hogan, the WWF Champion. So we get to WrestleMania 6, where the Ultimate Challenge match took place, and at the time WrestleMania did absolutely gangbuster numbers, and it seemed that we get a passing of the baton almost from babyface to babyface when Warrior beats Hogan to retain not only his Intercontinental title but also to go ahead and win that WWF Championship, which would ironically be for the first and only time in his career. Then after Mania, Warrior would revisit the feud with his long-term rival Rick Rude. He'd have a spat with Ted DiBiase, and he would end up teaming up with the Legion of Doom against Demolition. And then again, at the third year running, he was the captain and sole survivor for his team at Survivor Series. But then in the beginning of like 1991, real world issues in the Gulf inspired a WWF storyline that would eventually see Warrior drop the WWF title. Vince wanted to capitalize on the huge headlines that was being made from the Iraqi invasion of Kuwait and the subsequent Gulf War and Operation Desert Storm. So he and his creative team made the decision to have popular babyface and real-life G.I. Joe figure, Sergeant Slaughter, turn heel on America and start sympathizing with the Iraqis. And then with a little bit of interference from Randy Savage to kind of push Warrior's next feud, Slaughter would go on to win the WWF title from Warrior at the 1991 Royal Rumble before he dropped it to real American Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 7. Warrior would face Savage at 7, beating him in his in a career-threatening match before teaming back up with Hulk Hogan at SummerSlam to finally put to bed the Iraqi supporting foes. But in that build-up to SummerSlam, Warrior was also involved in another feud with The Undertaker and with Jake Roberts, where Jake offered to help Warrior to learn about the dark side so he could go toe-to-toe with The Undertaker. Jake then tested Warrior with three tests. So first he locked him in a coffin to see if he could cope with the darkness. Then he was buried alive. And then finally Jake had Ultimate Warrior enter a room full of snakes to look for a chest in the middle of the room. And when Warrior found this chest and opened it, he was bitten by a spitting cobra that was hidden in the chest. And as he was foaming at the mouth and kind of reacting to the venom, Jake revealed that he and Undertaker were in on this from the start. But we never actually got any resolution to this storyline because not long after SummerSlam, Ultimate Warrior was suspended from the company after he made several financial demands to Vince about payoffs, including the WrestleMania payoff. He no-showed some events. He threatened to no-show SummerSlam, so Vince paid him to make sure the show went ahead. And then subsequently, he was suspended pretty much the day after. Vince would return to Warrior when Hogan was set to leave the company in 1993. Warrior ended up coming back at WrestleMania 8, but by the time Survivor Series came around that year, he was out of the company. Again, financial demands and threats to no-show events was the final straw, and Vince cut Ultimate Warrior from the company. We would eventually see him come back a couple of years later, final four-month run in the company where he came and essentially squashed Hunter Hearst Helmsley at WrestleMania 10, had a feud with Goldust over the Intercontinental title, and had a spat with Jerry Lawler before he was eventually released again for no-showing events. So that is kind of like the backstory of Ultimate Warrior and his dalliances with the WWF. Obviously, he then went on to appear on the Indies, had a run in WCW where he got his rematch with Hogan, and eventually made his way back to the WWF to be entered in the Hall of Fame after a lot of animosity. And unfortunately, after he did his farewell speech on Raw after WrestleMania, he ultimately passed away. So yeah, it's a sad end to what was an extraordinary life in the world of wrestling. But when I went to kind of look into this story, I didn't think there was much meat on the bone, to be fair. But once you start kind of delving into the career and the numbers and the kind of the fan love that this guy had, I ended up asking myself whether Warrior was actually a failure as a champion. Now, if you take the WWF rhetoric, especially with the kind of the self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior DVD that was put out a few years ago, and the way he's kind of been portrayed, with kind of post new generation era eyes, I suppose, you would think that it was an absolute flop in terms of drawing power and in terms of fan appreciation. And whilst it was true that audience numbers were dwindling at the time, I don't know if that can solely be placed on the shoulders of Warrior. Firstly, those numbers were dwindling at the back end of that run that Hogan had, and he certainly wasn't the huge superstar that he was in perhaps the mid to late 80s. And whoever took that kind of spot from Hogan was always going to struggle to live in the shadow of Hulkamania. Looking at the buy rates, I think that Warrior's short-lived time on the top more than held its own. So before we go into those numbers, I just want to give a quick pause and be able to pay those bills. So definitely go and check out the Chair Shot Pro Wrestling TSAT. I know Pro Wrestling Tees have had a torrid time of it recently, but definitely go and check out some of the amazing T-shirt designs that we have over there. It helps keep the lights on over here at Chair Shot, helps us provide this content for you every single day for free. And whilst you're there, please check out the chairshot.com. It's an absolutely amazing resource for opinions, news, analysis, podcasts, written pieces, yeah, everything that you want in terms of wrestling content, you can certainly find it over there at the Chair Shot. So please go and check them out.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey folks, PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code ChairShot. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code ChairShot to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to Badlands, and yeah, let's get into those numbers and statistics. So let's go to SummerSlam 1990, which was the first event with Warrior as champion that got 507,000 buys. So this was down from the previous year, which got 625,000 buys. But if you compare it to the next SummerSlam, which is the Match Made in Heaven, Match Made in Hell SummerSlam, with Hogan and Warrior versus the Sympathizers, and with Savage and Miss Elizabeth having their wedding, that figure was actually 405,000 bars. Now, you would, if you would believe the kind of rhetoric and the history, you would think that that was the way bigger SummerSlam. But yeah, it got almost just over 100,000 bars less than the one where Warrior was the champion. Then we go forward to 1992, one of the most infamous SummerSlams, the one from Wembley Stadium, headlined by Bulldog and Bret Hart for that, in that epic for the RC title. That actually only got 280,000 bars. Now, I understand that that's because of logistics, of it being a UK show and it being shown at a very unorthodox time in the US. But again, it's still a huge show and really kind of revered in the annals of wrestling history. But it got almost half of the bars that Warrior on top in SummerSlam 1990 got. So then let's fast forward to Survivor Series. Survivor Series 1990 with Warrior as champion. That got 400,000 bars. And this was actually up on Survivor Series 1989 by 15,000. That got 385,000 bars. But then you fast forward to the next SummerSlam, which actually headlined with Hogan versus Undertaker for the title. The bar rates dropped to 300,000, so they lost 25%, 100,000 bars. Then finally, let's compare Royal Rumbles. 1991 was the Rumble where Warrior was champion, lost his title to Sergeant Slaughter, and it was also the Rumble where Hogan went on to win. That got 440,000 bars, which was well up from the 1990 Royal Rumble, which also saw Hogan win, obviously leading to that the match between Warrior and Hogan at WrestleMania 6. The bar rate for the 1990 Royal Rumble was 260,000. And then by the time we rolled round to the next Royal Rumble, 1992, arguably the greatest Royal Rumble ever, with Ric Flair winning the title by winning the Royal Rumble match, that only got 260,000 bars. So I sent almost half of what the Royal Rumble got when Ultimate Warrior was on top. So these kind of figures, for me, fly in the face of Warrior being a flop, especially financially as a champion. But I do feel that there are several factors to why the run of the Warrior wasn't as successful, or doesn't get looked upon as being as successful as perhaps it could have or perhaps it should have. So I want to go through a few of those points, and it's kind of a different slant on standard Badlands that we've come to have on this show. Normally I would kind of try and run a timeline, but for me, I think going through the details of Warrior and his runs in WWF and what could have changed had decisions gone different ways, I think it's more kind of pertinent to talk about the issues that went wrong and kind of sum it up at the end, which is what I'm going to attempt to do. So please bear with me. So the first point I think that was an issue was that Warrior as a character didn't connect with teens and adults in the same way that he connected with the younger audience. The kids, the preteens, absolutely adored Warrior because he was this over-top, colourful kind of superhero-style character. Whereas teens and adults certainly didn't have that that same feeling towards him, and certainly didn't share that feeling that they had with Hogan. Hogan had this unique appeal to almost every demographic of the wrestling fan base. Kids looked up to him as a hero. Teens adored him as somebody to aspire to, a really kind of a honourable figure. Adults loved the unashamed good guy Americana of Hulk Hogan, and the older generation, Hogan was like the link to wrestling path for them. So he had a real kind of a cross demographic appeal, where I think Warrior just didn't have that. He had a very significant kid appeal. But that didn't necessarily translate as you go up through the generations. So the second point, and I think this is going to be one that may be contested by Ray and Paul when we hear their viewpoints on this topic, was I don't think the baton pass from Hogan worked properly. For me, it felt that face and face title matches, they just didn't seem viable at establishing a new star at the top of the company, especially when you consider who one of those faces were. So you look back at previous moments that have kind of cemented wrestler statuses in the WWF. So you look at Hogan at WrestleMania 3. Slamming Andre the Giant was absolutely huge for him in the context of the WWF. But before that, he'd already been champion. He didn't. This wasn't his kind of a ascent to the WWF title. This was more a WrestleMania moment for him. Then you go to WrestleMania 5, where Macho Man finally proved he could go toe to toe with Hulk Hogan. Yeah, granted, he lost, but it was in one of the best matches up to then that the WWF had put on. But he, again, had already been WWF champion. He'd won the title at a previous WrestleMania. So I think that giving Warrior his first taste of WWF title against Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania meant that he had to instantly fill those boots that were being left by Hulk Hogan, rather than kind of cement his already kind of established legacy as WWF champion by beating Hogan. I think throwing all those factors in at once, it left him a lot to live up to, and from looking back at it, it doesn't seem like he was able to do that. So then the third point for me, and this is a huge issue, and it's one that we see time and time again, is that Hogan didn't go away after the loss. In the aftermath of this baton being passed, Warrior should have been able to have his time in the sun to kind of get out of that shadow of Hulkamania. But fortunately, Hulk Hogan being Hulk Hogan, that shadow lived on. Hulk went straight into a feud with Earthquake and then led into a storyline where he was considering retiring, and that the viewers were asked to send letters and postcards in order to convince Hogan to stick around. And by the time we get to SummerSlam of that year, Hogan's back as a full-time wrestler. So Warrior wasn't given his time to shine at the top of the company before the focus was shifted back onto Hogan. And yet again, and as we'd see further in his career, Hogan found a way to stay in the limelight by stunting another person's day in the sun, essentially. Another major sticking point, and point number four on my list, is that essentially Hogan had already beaten everybody. So by the time Ultimate Warrior came in and had the Ultimate Challenge, beating Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania, there was nobody really viable to step up to Warrior to be his next feud. And when you have that first run as a champion, you need a really strong first feud to cement yourself as someone who deserves to be champion, someone who looks relevant as a champion. Ultimate Warrior just didn't get that. Hogan had already pretty much beaten every heel, and the only heel that would have looked viable at the time was the Earthquake. And who went into a storyline with Earthquake? Mr. Hulk Hogan. So that this meant whoever Warrior faced post Hulk Hogan didn't have the star power, or didn't have the gravitas to legitimize Warrior as world champion. Which then kind of like fades straight into point number five, that Warrior had really poor post WrestleMania booking. So as I said, going hand in hand with that point of number four, the booking did not help Warrior cement himself as champion. They went straight to rehashing a feud with Rick Rude, which, like I said, was a massive waste of time when you had the potential of the Earthquake feud ready made. Earthquake was already making waves in the company. They had that storyline where he'd taken out Hogan, and Hogan was asking the fans for letters to convince him to not retire. That could have easily led to Warrior being the person who slays the Earthquake to really kind of unite the Hulkamaniacs and the Little Warriors, and kind of essentially cement himself as the world champion. But instead, he got the run with Rick Rude, which, whilst Rick Rude was good at carrying the Warrior to a great match, it didn't have the gravitas that a first feud should have had. And then once we got past the stuff with Rick Rude, we had Warrior teaming up with LOD for a long time in their kind of battle with Demolition. And whilst that's essentially a dream match for wrestling fans around the time, I mean, LOD were the hottest thing in terms of tag teams, and they're teaming up with the WWF champion, it should have been a massive thing. It meant that it did very little for Warrior as champion. It didn't. He didn't have that legacy of WWF as WWF champion, because he did little to elevate the title because of the people who he was put up against. So next, and point number six, and we're getting to the end of these points soon. Don't fret. So number six is, there was bad timing with real life events, and I mentioned this up a little bit earlier, that the Gulf War and the aftermath from that really hurt Warrior's run as champion, because he wasn't the all-American hero, the person to slay the Iraqi invaders that the WF and that Vince wanted to capitalize on. There was only one man for that role, and that was Hulk Hogan, and only Hulk Hogan. So when Iraq versus the US was happening in real life, Vince wanted to quickly transition to a WWF counterpart. And having Slaughter as a heel and the Iraqi sympathizer, and then Hogan as the savior of the world, props to Sar over on Chain Wrestling. You'll get a little pop from that. It made all the sense in the world to transition to that, to have Hogan be the guy that vanquishes the Iraqi sympathizers. And unfortunately, Warrior was a victim of that circumstance. But if it was just that bad timing, you could forgive the WWF for wanting to capitalize and then going back to the well with Warrior. But unfortunately, then the final point I want to make is he had bad attitude problems. Vince and Warrior were consistently butting heads over things like money. We've spoke about how he held SummerSlam up to ransom, and he was no-showing events more and more often. And this was kind of a death knell for Warrior to be a viable, long-term and reliable replacement for Hulk Hogan. Had he not had these kind of these issues, these delusions of grandeur, there could have easily been a timeline where Warrior has multiple runs as world champion and eventually does become that guy to take over at the top once Hulk Hogan had left in 1993. So yeah, those are for me the big factors in why the Warrior run isn't looked at as successful as perhaps it could be. And we'll just have another quick break before I go into essentially the what ifs and what could have been different for Ultimate Warrior. But yeah, definitely, like I said earlier, go and check out ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot and go and get yourself some amazing quality merchandise, and check out some of the rest of the content creators here on ChairShot, because they work tirelessly to provide you with daily content. So yeah, go and show them a little bit of love.
This is your boy Kenny Killer telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
Welcome back to Badlands. So let's get into my views on what potentially could have happened had these issues with the Warrior not have caused him to butt heads with Vince, not caused him to leave the company, and not kind of stunted his run as world champion. In kind of like a different take to these Badlands, I want to actually focus on something that had the potential to fundamentally alter the wrestling timeline for what I would consider one of the pillars of wrestling lore, and something that we've covered quite extensively on the show in other topics. And it's something I didn't really kind of factor in until I was kind of working down the timeline of what could have potentially happened with Warrior and being champion. So as I mentioned before, going into SummerSlam 1991, Warrior was embroiled in a feud with Jake Roberts and The Undertaker. And if Warrior didn't have his clash with Vince over money and attitude and no-showing events, that feud would have continued post-SummerSlam. And in this period of WWF, feuds were very slow-burning affairs. And with the three players in this story, this certainly had legs to go on far beyond SummerSlam. So instead of hot-shotting Undertaker into a mini-story with Hogan and Ric Flair on the periphery of the town scene, I think Undertaker continues in this storyline with the Ultimate Warrior, continues with his alignment with Jake Roberts. We could have easily transitioned to Hogan versus Flair being the title feud, which obviously would have led to the biggest names facing off at WrestleMania. The match that we should have probably had in the WWF and not eventually had some decades later in WCW when they were both well past their prime. But I think on the undercard of that WrestleMania, we could have built to a really interesting storyline. At Survivor Series, we could have had Jake finally getting his comeuppance from the Warrior. That then could lead to Warrior versus Undertaker at WrestleMania 8. So you would have WrestleMania 8 headlined by Hogan versus Flair instead of Hogan versus Sid. Then you would have on the undercard Warrior versus Undertaker. So now we have to bear in mind that Undertaker had only made his WrestleMania debut the previous year, WrestleMania 7, when he beat Snuka. In the original timeline, he goes on to face Jake the Snake again in a kind of almost a rushed end to this storyline to essentially cut out the Warriors' role in it. He beats Jake the Snake. But I think if Warrior is still in the picture, we see the end of something that essentially wouldn't really be acknowledged as a thing until 2005. I think we would see Warrior beating Undertaker at WrestleMania 8 before going on to regain that title at SummerSlam 1992. So, essentially, Warrior breaks the streak before it becomes the streak. And again, that, like I said, that's a fundamental shift in what became one of the biggest kind of stories over the past 20 years of wrestling since 2005 when Randy essentially attempted to end the streak for the first time, when it was first acknowledged as a streak, going all the way through the Triple H's attempts to end the streak, CM Punk, all the way through the retirement matches of Shawn Michaels to Brock eventually beating the streak, Roman. This one kind of match with Warrior, this one change in the path of one wrestler would have a massive effect on the world of wrestling. And it's really interesting how these little ripples end up being almost tsunamis of change when it comes to the grand scheme of wrestling. Something that I really didn't factor in when I was looking at the backstory of Ultimate Warrior and how things could have been different. And I really wanted that to be kind of the huge takeaway. I wanted to leave Paul and Ray with that thought and kind of hear their feedback on it. But as I kind of more delved into what potentially could have happened, something else really kind of struck me as well, that there's actually a knock-on effect that I didn't originally foresee. And in a similar way that the booking of Hulk Hogan stunted the rise of the Warrior in this situation, but also the rise of other wrestlers, in a world where Warrior is on top of the WWF for longer runs, that can kind of stunt the rise of one of the more popular wrestlers in the history of the sport. So I have a feeling that Warrior returning to the top of the card, it kind of takes up a spot that was filled by one Bret Hart. He emerged from the rubble of 1992 to go to WrestleMania 9 as champion. Obviously, we all know what happened there when Hogan politicked his way to leave the show as champion. But in this world, where Warrior has taken that mantle from Hogan, Hogan isn't there to politic. But also, that spot that Bret is occupying is occupied by Ultimate Warrior. So you don't see that elevation from Bret from the tag team division to the intercontinental level, all the way to world level, in the same kind of pathway as it did originally. And then there's also kind of another kind of a domino effect here, and it's really kind of been interesting looking back at this and kind of following the pathways, following the strings, how these intertwine and interconnect. So without that rise of Bret Hart, would we see the rise of Shawn Michaels in the same way that we did? There's no long-term feud between Hart and HBK over the titles. No hatred and professional and personal jealousy festering between the two. Essentially, what I'm getting at is Ultimate Warrior could have totally negated two of the biggest travesties in Bret Hart's career, because there would be no need for Hogan's politicking to walk out of WrestleMania 9 as champion. But then in the same breath, there would be no need for the Montreal Screwjob that sees Bret leave the company altogether. And then in a similar vein, there would be no spot currently for Bret at the top of the division. It's a real kind of tangled web. And like I said, with no Bret at the top, do we see that rivalry that drags Shawn Michaels up? Because we covered it in a previous show how the personal vendetta that Shawn Michaels had against Bret is what spurred him on to be world champion caliber of a wrestler. It was wanting to better the achievements of Bret Hart that spurred Shawn Michaels on. So without Bret Hart reaching those heights, do we see Shawn Michaels reach those heights? And then the final kind of thought I want to end on is we don't see all the politicking of Hulk Hogan, especially in that kind of post WrestleMania 7 run, where Hogan is trying to kind of relive the glory years of the late 80s, early 90s, where he essentially overstayed his welcome. We see him in the title picture at WrestleMania 8, forces his way into WrestleMania 9, then eventually goes away and becomes this huge star in WCW after kind of floundering at the beginning. Do we see that? Do we see Hogan's star power rise again with the NWO? Perhaps, but perhaps not. It's a very kind of tangled, wrinkled pathway to the outcomes of wrestling, I suppose. But this is one topic that I would really love to hear other people's opinions on. It's been interesting kind of throwing my thoughts out to the void without having the kind of the back and forth with Ray and Paul. Perhaps my views would have been different if I got their instant feedback and thoughts on it, and I'm sure we'll hear their opinions and their views and the things they agree with and they don't agree with over the next few weeks. But I'd love to hear you guys listening out there, your views and your thoughts on this. Do you think I've gone way off track, or is there things that I may have missed, or is there thoughts that you agree with, that you disagree with? Let us know on the Twitter sphere. But yeah, that about wraps up Badlands for this week. Thank you for putting up with me waffling in your ear for the past 40 minutes or so. Yeah, this was a really interesting topic by Mr. Toller. It's a shame I haven't been able to kind of get his viewpoints on this. But that leaves me to for one thing before we wrap up, and that's the topic for next week. And I think I've got a very interesting question to pose to you, the listeners, and to Ray and Paul, and that is, what if The Rock wasn't a success in Hollywood? So we all know that the Rock left to be one of the biggest stars in the world and potential future president of the USA, most highest paid movie star of all time. What if that flopped? What if that never happened? what would the wrestling landscape and Hollywood landscape be if The Rock hadn't been a success in Hollywood? So yeah, that's next week's topic. All that is left for me to do now is the social medias, and we are out of here. So you can follow me personally on the Twitter at PodfatherMags. You can follow Mr. Ray Cash, and definitely go and show him a love. He's having a very, very tough time of it now. And Ray Rance, I love you, brother. Can't wait to hear you again, sir. But you can follow him at It's Ray Cash, and you can follow Paul if you want. No bother if you don't want. At Ray Encounter, yeah, definitely go and give Paul a follow. He's an absolutely amazing guy. Definitely, as I've said earlier, check out all the rest of the content here on Chair Shot, where it's absolutely amazing the amount of top quality content, in not only in audio but also in written on the chairshot.com that this group of creators put out. And yeah, definitely go and check them out. But as always, we have one rule here around Badlands, and that is whether you are formulating a what if, a Mount Rushmore, or just debating the wrestling topics of the day, you must always use your head. Bye bye, guys.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.